City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We are talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fane.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by the American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Way to God. I said I found my way in beep dap and Dubai. That's how I found my way to God. Walking down the street saying hi, hello. But how far do you think I can go before I start having to sing in the blues dap and Dubai? Tapping to the beat singing hidey ho. But how long do you think I can go before I start having to get in the groove?
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 433. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fane.
And Mitchell, it's a show about lesbians.
Well, I'm a huge fan.
You are. You are a thespian lesbian.
I am. You know, I was.
You
recently...
crush out on the really butch lesbians. Oh. You actually have a crush on our guest today who's on
I
the
do,
show.
I do, and she knows it. I can't even pretend.
Yeah.
I told the person she's dating.
Yes.
That I did.
Yeah.
Although I also found the person she's dating incredibly attractive as well. So maybe.
There you go.
There's going to be.
It's all time. Said and
the
done.
The kids are all right. There's some weird thing going on here.
The kids are all right and it's a kid thing. So let me ask you this. The subject is lesbians. Don't turn it off, boys. Don't turn it off because I said the subject is lesbians. Mitchell's here. See, this should make it
right.
Kinder and gentler and you should want to hang around because he's funny and
lesbians?
Gay. I don't know. But, you know, every now and again, the boys might say, this doesn't have anything to do with me if I say this show's about lesbians. It's also about having kids.
Yes,
of course. May turn off some lesbians and some men or make some men stay and listen longer. Or
I don't know. You know, I think in a lot of ways, yes, it's about lesbians having kids, but really it's about family,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
It's about family.
So did you want to be a parent?
I still do.
You still want to be a parent?
I haven't given up.
Nope.
Nope. You know, I mean, you know, because you know me, how many kids I have in my life,
mm-hmm.
and how they feel about me and how I feel about them. I have so many young people in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I continue to have young people in my life, and I feel...
You're a big mentor. I mean, you've spent much of that time being a teacher, being a mentor,
being
a counselor, I guess.
I love it, and those people, those
teacher.
Young people are still in my lives,
mm-hmm.
still in my life. I'm still in their lives. Just today, actually,
mm-hmm.
I spent a little time with a young man and a young woman. They're both in their early 20s. They're mm-hmm. circus performers. They both graduated from the Cirque du Soleil school in
mm-hmm.
Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And they're extraordinary.
Sure, they'd have to be.
And I have not seen them, either of them, in many years since they were kids and started school, like 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to see them today, and it was like
It
was like no time had passed. You know, I'm
so
proud of them and, you know, and so inspired by them. Yes, I do want to be. The short answer is yes, I want to be a parent.
So now when you say, okay, so you want the infant, you want the like
the
diapers
thing.
And the
I
pooping
do.
And the...
I'm fine with that.
You want to breastfeed and all that.
Well, I'm not so sure about that.
You want your uterus to ache and
all
that
well,
good
so
stuff.
You know what's funny? Oh, you weren't there, actually. I was at the Chicago Folk and Roots Festival,
uh-huh.
and there was the most adorable baby like dancing
yeah.
in front of us. And I leaned over to my friend, Beth, who was
uh-huh.
there, and then... her group of friends, and
right.
I leaned over and I said, oh God, if I had a uterus, it would be throbbing right now. Unfortunately, one of the women who was with Beth had no idea who I was or that
right.
we were friends. She just thought a total stranger leaned over and said that to her. And she just
she's
looked
a little scared of you.
She was a little bit. Now we've become friends, but I don't know. I've always...
It's really not a gay. It's not a gay straight thing, you know. Really, because
I think it is.
Because as we know, and I mean, definitely, the past decade and a half has seen this you know, surge of gay couples and lesbian couples having families and having children in whatever.
Do you know what the fastest rise, the state with the fastest rising number of lesbian parent households is? Kentucky.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
It surprised
me. It actually doesn't, because there's some places that, yeah, I mean, Kentucky's,
also in Kentucky just recently.
But North Carolina is another great place for lesbians, so that's why I guess Kentucky doesn't surprise me.
Well, Kentucky surprised me because it can be, nothing against Kentucky, because I have a love affair with Louisville, but just recently a lesbian family got attacked in Louisville at a 4th of July, like at a fireworks display.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally attacked for being, so it's curious, but it is interesting that that rural families are sprouting up, because we tend to think of like
urban
families and like we're a lesbian couple or we're two gay men and we live in the city and
we have our soy milk and
we live in Evanston just outside the city and I find it interesting that the most rising number of lesbian families in the country are in rural Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's interesting.
It is interesting. That is interesting. Now, see, I feel I've never had a biological clock.
Oh, I was afraid that you were actually, that this whole podcast was just
so I could tell you that I'm pregnant.
Or that you want me to father your child or
something. Well, I would want you to father my child. You're Jerry. I mean, yes. Jerry Dye has dibs.
Yay.
But you could both put your sperm in a cup and we let them duke it out.
Exactly.
See which one.
I'm
and you and Jerry look so much alike that I'm totally sure that we wouldn't know which
one. We wouldn't know the difference, right?
But, I like kids, and I loved being around, loved being a camp counselor. I love little people.
Yeah, I love
I've just
people
never had that. I am not one of the women in a room who, when there's an infant there,
starts
that
to
I can't wait. Yeah, that I can't wait to put my hands on it. That I can't wait to hold it. And I am around. I have a lot of straight women friends, anywhere from 28 to 45 or older, but that age range.
Old as Helen Mirren.
Yes, well. And then it's a special friend. but I have, I see that happen. And so part of me is also like, I am not going to take one moment of that woman's time with this infant when she wants her hands on that infant,
Right, right, right. See, I'm the opposite. Although I have this thing about babies. I think I'm super sensitive because I love little people and I still am a little person in a lot of ways. I don't mean age-wise, but I am little. And because I'm little, and I've always been little, even when I was little, I was the littlest of the little.
Mm-hmm.
People grab at you, and the idea of tickling kids, or I let kids come to me. I've never been a person who like picks up a stranger's kid.
Yeah.
If somebody says, "Would you like to hold the baby?" I sort of test and see if the baby feels like coming.
Yeah.
I just have never been one of those people because I'm so sensitive about that.
Yeah.
And I think as a result, babies
come to you.
They do. They respond to me because I'm not. I don't know. I think there's some. I am one of those people, like that freakish person that if a baby's crying and then somebody hands them to me, they stop crying. And I don't have an explanation for it, except that I think I'm uber comfortable.
And you're lactating.
And I'm lactating.
Most days of the month.
I am lactating. I agree with you. I don't think it's a gay or straight thing. I think it's like...
But I have to say, as a woman, you somehow feel like there's something wrong with you.
Oh, I get
it. I think society tells you there is something wrong with you, even if you're lesbian. Nowadays, I think it used to be, even maybe 10 years ago, that if you were lesbian, people didn't think something was wrong with you. But now, it's such the common question to get asked to me of like...
The word I hear about that, the word that I hear used in that way, which I find so offensive, is... for example, I have a straight female friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
She's married.
Mm-hmm.
And... people in her family keep saying she's selfish for not wanting children.
Hmm.
And she,
nobody says that to me. I think it's selfish almost in this day and age to feel like you want to go through some huge rigmarole to have a baby.
Sometimes
when
I think
there
that's
are
true.
So many babies that need a loving home. And I have, that's what I mean. Like, I have definitely thought I have a lot to offer a child.
Right.
And that, I don't, as an ego thing, need to see myself manifested. Would that be cool if that happened?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Who doesn't want to like look at something and
that'd
go,
be cool,
that's
right.
part
super
of me
trippy,
or
right.
whatever. I mean, tons of people who have kids who may be listening to this understand that there's something magical about that aspect. But if that aspect is that so powerful, and it is for some people, and
it
I get
is.
That. But I just think there are so many kids who need a loving home.
Oh, my goodness.
That,
it's insane.
That if we're going through all these crazy ways in which to try to have a child.
And so expensive.
That you could just adopt a child.
I agree. I mean,
now that adoption laws are getting better. I mean, it just continues to get
better.
It is
so expensive. But it's very expensive to do all those fertility treatments and in vitro. And
or to have a surrogate for
a
gay
surrogate,
men.
Or the idea that you take all these
although at least some of those are unwanted
children.
These
hormones and stuff, and then people end up having 8 children. Like, women aren't supposed to be dogs having litters.
Yeah.
And so it's a weird phenomena that the because the technology is there, which I get.
And it's a blessing. It's a miracle that we have science that can do that.
Of course. It's amazing. But I do think maybe it's a little over the top. And, you know, I'm not a woman who has trouble getting pregnant, so I'm not judging. But I do think sometimes I think maybe that's the universe saying that there's another child out there who needs you.
Well, and I just think, shouldn't it kind of be the GLBT community's charge that we take up the unwanted young? That we take up.
I love that idea, Amy.
That we take up, you know, those who are not claimed, that are outside of, that are abandoned, that are, unable to be cared for. You know, that we could become
a
community.
That is such a radical idea. I agree with you. Imagine that idea. Like, imagine running on that platform. I mean, I think right now just about politics in America.
Yeah.
It's such a huge swelling of homophobia in response to the advances that have been made.
Yeah.
The Rick Perrys and the Michelle Bachmans. Yeah. And all of them. I mean, they're just so terrible. And Santorum. And, I mean, he was particularly horrible. I saw recently online about gays and Christ and all that sort of stuff in the Bible, and I think what
they would freak out if we said this is our mandate that we're going to take all the unwanted
children,
but they don't want them.
They don't want them. We're going to turn them into. They'd rather have them be completely parentless than possibly made gay. What if we did in fact make them gay? Which of course we can't. But what if we did? Yeah. Which is sort of fabulous. we can't. But you know, I had straight parents and they were nightmares.
Yes.
I couldn't possibly be.
I had
worse
lovely
than my parents.
Straight parents, but I happen to be gay.
Right, and you're not alone in your family too, right?
Right.
So, I mean, none of us are alone in our families. And but I saw something online, and maybe other people saw this today too. The joke was, how many homophobes does it take to screw in a light bulb? None, because they hate change even if it will brighten the world.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that good?
That's really good.
Isn't that good?
You should t-shirts for that.
I know. I think it was. I think it was somebody's t-shirt, and somebody snapped a picture and put it online
today. Oh, that's
today.
Great. I just think we should take over
Let's
the world domination. We should start an adoption agency, you know. We're taking over young minds, one child at a time.
I mean, honestly.
No, but seriously, I mean it in a serious way. I think that it's, really hope people in the GLBT community who really want to have kids will just at least seriously contemplate that option. And I know a lot of women and men that have, you know, men who find mothers who are giving their child up for an adoption and they take care of, you know, and that can happen for a lesbian couple as well, I mean, I guess.
There's a flip side of this too, which is interesting. I have these young friends.
Mm-hmm.
She, I believe, is 23 and her little brother is, I think, 19 or 20 or something like that. And they were raised by this straight couple, you know, their biological parents.
Right.
And then they also took in my friend Patrick.
Uh-huh.
Who's, you know, 26. And they deliberately, as a couple, when they decided to have children, this straight couple, who are marvelous, marvelous, marvelous people, moved to the most lesbian-centric area that they could find because they thought it would be the best place to raise their kids. Isn't that fascinating?
It's pretty smart.
And you know what? They have raised... I can get emotional talking about these kids. They've raised three of the most extraordinary young people I know. Three people who will change the world in their own way, you know, with their kindness and their brains and their art and their passion. And I'm not saying it's because of the lesbians, but I think how extraordinary... Of course it's because of the lesbians. But I just think, isn't that such a beautiful thing that this couple chose to go where there was diversity, specifically, female
energy.
So that their children
just
could be raised in this place where they felt safe and right, that maternal, that sort of earth mother sort of thing. Not that boys aren't capable of it. I'm just using this as an example. And it worked because these three children that they have raised are extraordinary.
Mm.
Extraordinary young people, all three straight, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so loving and ambitious and kind and talented. It's just, I find it fascinating.
It's interesting because, you know, I think so much time is spent, like, what will the kids be like, you know? I mean, that was always the conversation, like, a decade ago or whatever. Right. It was like, you know, what are the kids going to be like when they go to school and they have two moms, they have two dads or whatever? But what's really interesting is that this...
How about if the other parents stop being douchebags and don't let their kids be assholes? Well, don't teach your kid to be an asshole, and my kid, who's raised by me and my partner, will be fine, you dick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think nowadays it's become trendy to have, you know, like, gay parents if they're
right,
kid.
At the PTA, right?
Yes. But
some places.
But I think what's really interesting is that our guest today, Sarah Gubbins, playwright, Chicago playwright, openly lesbian, has written this play, The Kid Thing, that's being done by Chicago dramatist and About Face Theater, and it's on stage right now. And I'm going to be sitting with Sarah and talking with her about this. But, you know, I think this, the interesting thing about this play is it actually is, like, what is this conversation for us as gay and lesbian people in consciously... you know, building a family, consciously making the choice to have kids. It's not going to be an accident when any of us have kids.
Right.
And it's not going to be like a big one-night stand, and then what do we do? Or it's and then also the flip side of that is I don't think it's societally expected that we have kids.
Right.
Whereas if you're a hetero couple, you know, you get married, and as soon as you've gotten married, first it's like you date, and then people go, when are you going to get married? And as soon as you get married, it's like, when are you going to have kids?
Right.
And so it's
when you move out to the suburbs.
Right. It's like the path is laid out in front of you, and we're kind of building a path as gay and lesbian couples who want to have families or don't want to have families, or what that whole conversation is. What if one partner or somebody you fall in love with feels differently than you do, but you love that person? Is that a deal breaker? And so I think, you know, it's a really interesting conversation that is universal too today.
The question I want you to ask Sarah, because I won't be here. I want you to ask Sarah, if you have a chance, if you can, or I'll ask her. I also think as we, as gays and lesbians and our families, and as we assimilate, whatever that word means, what happens to the gay culture? You know, in a way, does it...
change?
Because part of what has made us, whatever the perception of gay culture or gay iconography or, you know, lesbian whatever...
Right.
Is partly due to the fact that there was an underground quality, there was an outlaw quality to who we are.
We weren't going to conform to marriage.
So we created our own thing. You know, it's that whole thing about, like,
community, you know, as opposed to family.
Right, and specifically gay men, you know, we're told from the get-go that we're not sort of included or allowed, so we went out and became libertines, and we screw everything, whatever.
Right.
And don't be jealous. You know, just because we've created different rules for ourselves and open relationships and all that sort of stuff, not that all gay men do, but you know what I'm talking about. Then we get sort of judged for it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're so promiscuous. But it's like, you disinvited us to the party.
Right.
And then we came up with something cooler than what you got.
Yep.
You're pissed about it. So I wonder what's going to happen to us as a culture.
I think that you're asking a question that's probably on the other side of this whole play, too. Like, it's the next play.
That's
right.
The
next play.
Well,
I
wonder,
like,
what Sarah, having written a play
like
this, what she sort of imagines as a playwright, you know?
Yeah.
What's the other side of it? If she wrote a sequel to this, what about the kids of these women?
Yeah.
You know?
It is. I mean, I think it's really fascinating. I definitely am going to talk with her a little bit about the influence of, you know, The Kids Are All Right, which is actually grown-up kids.
Right.
You know, kids who are at that place, as opposed to This Is the Question. It's kind of like, you know, from seed to, like, collegiate
shining
years.
Seed.
Yeah, seed to shining seed. But anyhow, Sarah Gubbins is on.
I made myself laugh.
Very cute. It's very cute. We should put on red, white, and blue and some sparklers right now.
I don't know why you made me laugh. It just did. I'm going to kick myself right in the Helen Mirren.
Oh, yay! So Sarah Gubbins on the show. We got GLBT news for you. What else is going on in the theater? And we hope you enjoy it with The Kid Thing and a little bit about the children.
The children.
I believe the children are our future.
Well, you're an idiot.
Okay.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News. Republican Puerto Rican Senator Roberto Arango has resigned from office after a very explicit nude photo surfaced on the gay pickup site Grindr. Arango was vice chair to George W. Bush's 2004 Puerto Rico campaign and has been the majority leader of Puerto Rico's Senate since 2009. His resignation has already taken effect.
Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solomonese will not renew his contract, which expires March 31st, 2012. Solomonese gave 6 months' notice before leaving his position. He took the helm of the nation's largest LGBT political organization in 2005.
In Washington, D.C., an off-duty police officer allegedly shot at three transgender women and two male friends. The officer, Kenneth Furb, has been stripped of his police duties, pending the outcome of an investigation by Internal Affairs and the force investigation team. One of the victims claimed that Furb became incensed when he solicited one of the women for sex and she rejected him.
In Texas, the same-sex domestic partners of employees at Dallas's Parkland Hospital will soon have access to health benefits after the facility's board of managers approved the proposal first offered almost 4 years ago. The benefits are expected to cost $700,000 in the fiscal 2012 year. However, the board said it will make the hospital more competitive for workers and will allow it to improve its quality of care.
In California, an adult film actor is tested positive for HIV, prompting Los Angeles Productions to temporarily shut down until the results can be confirmed. Rules dictate that adult film performers must be tested every 30 days and show proof of a clean test before they can work.
The Reverend Tracy Lind, a married lesbian priest, is one of five finalists to become the next bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of New York. Lind, age 57, is dean of Cleveland's Trinity Cathedral. She married Emily Ingalls last year in New Hampshire.
The trial involving openly gay former Army Lieutenant Dan Choi was put on hold for 10 days as his attorneys argue that he is being treated differently because of the subject of his protest. Choi, who faces a maximum sentence of 6 months in jail or a $5,000 fine if found guilty, had earlier told reporters that he rejected a plea bargain offer because he believes the law used to arrest him is unconstitutional.
Former Wisconsin Representative Mark Newman has announced he's running for the U.S. Senate next year as a Republican, setting up a possible contest with lesbian Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin. Newman has an anti-gay background.
In California, a jury has been unable to reach a verdict in the murder trial of teenager Brandon McInerney, who was accused of shooting gay classmate Lawrence King in the back of the head 3 years ago. Prosecutors claim that McInerney committed the crime because he didn't like gay people, while the defense contended McInerney snapped after King allegedly sexually harassed him. The jury began deliberating August 26th after 8 weeks of testimony.
In Utah, several people attacked Dane Hall, a gay Salt Lake City man, while reportedly using anti-gay slurs. Hall, age 20, was walking home from Club Sounds Gay Night when four men attacked him. Hall lost six teeth, suffered a broken jaw, and had a piece of bone shoved into his brain. Friends have set up a bank account to pay Hall's medical expenses since he lacks health insurance.
In Florida, Frankly Forte and Eliud Hazy, Miami Beach cops who were fired after allegedly beating and wrongly arresting two gay men 2 years ago, say they are victims and should get their jobs back. In 2009, the officers charged the two gay men with loitering and prowling, saying the men were suspiciously walking around the park. Prosecutors eventually dropped all charges.
In Georgia, Brian Michael Sawyer, a former top executive with the gay nightlife publication David Magazine, has been arrested. Booking information showed that Sawyer had a criminal charge against him, but did not include details of said charge. Sawyer had been a key player in the company that bought David and Southern Voice for $9,000 in bankruptcy court more than 2 years ago. Before that, Sawyer was chief operating officer at Gaydar, also a weekly nightlife magazine. A printer sued that publication, claiming it owed more than $40,000.
In world news, the National Presbyterian Church of Mexico has voted to cut ties with the United States Presbyterian Church over the issue of gay ministers. Despite a 139-year history and a network of ministries spanning the United States-Mexico border, the Mexican denomination made the decision after the United States Church voted in May to allow the ordination of gay and lesbian clergy.
The Scottish government has started a promised consultation regarding marriage equality. The government said it's considering if it should allow religious ceremonies for civil partnerships and the possible introduction of same-sex marriage. It's also considering if opposite-sex couples should have civil partnerships.
It turns out that the legendary castrato opera star Farinelli, who died in 1782, apparently had a disease usually found only in postmenopausal women. Removing Farinelli's testes before puberty resulted in hormone-related consequences, as well as the absence of typical male growth in the larynx. His skull showed signs of hyperostosis frontalis interna, or HFI, a thickening of the inner table of the forehead bone that is found almost exclusively in postmenopausal women.
Sam P. Yali, an ex-deputy minister in Ghana's administration, has called for gay people to be charged with genocide. Yali, a public interest attorney, recently criticized Attorney General Martin Amadou's claim that sex between consenting adults of the same gender in the privacy of their own home is not illegal in the African country.
In entertainment news, Jamaican singer Mr. Maja P has released the world's first pro-gay reggae album. The album, entitled Tolerant, contains 11 songs, including tunes supporting marriage equality and same-sex adoption. The tracks also feature attacks on the anti-gay biases of reggae singer Beanie Man and Jamaican Prime Minister Bruce Golding.
Beyoncé's pregnancy announcement at the VMAs, which, by the way, established a record by prompting 8,868 tweets per second, may have affected production of her Clint Eastwood-directed remake of A Star Is Born. The musical was slated to start production in February. However, her pregnancy will probably push that date back. That may give the studio more time to find another male co-star, since Eastwood's first choice, Leonardo DiCaprio, isn't filming the movie.
The new cast of Dancing with the Stars has been revealed, and transgender activist Chaz Bono and gay fashion stylist Carson Kressley are among the new dancers. The Dancing with the Stars message board filled with anti-LGBT comment upon news of Bono's inclusion. Bono will dance with a woman.
BBC Worldwide Sales and Distribution announced today that comedy phenomenon Absolutely Fabulous will return to television with three brand new episodes, with BBC America and Logo serving as joint American co-producers for the series. Jennifer Saunders and Joanna Lumley will reprise their celebrated roles as Dina and Patsy.
The syndicated daytime show Divorce Show aired its first case involving a lesbian couple on August 30th. Judge Lynn Toler resolved a case involving Leela Keys and Lakeisha Dennis, who were legally married in California before the anti-gay marriage initiative Proposition 8 was reinstituted. The couple had been together for 8 years.
James Franco will not make his Broadway debut this fall. He has left the production of the Tennessee Williams play Sweet Bird of Youth, which co-stars Nicole Kidman.
A gay sex scene on BBC's Torchwood between John Barrowman and another man received 500 complaints from a total of 3.4 million viewers. The scene featured a flashback with Barrowman's omnisexual character, Captain Jack Harkness, in bed with an Italian immigrant in 1927.
Hugh Jackman is taking on the role of Valjean in Les Miserables, and other A-list co-stars could be joining him. Russell Crowe may play Javert, while Jeffrey Rush, Helen Bonham Carter, Emma Watson, Hayden Panettiere, Miranda Cosgrove, Anne Hathaway, and Amy Adams are all reportedly competing for other roles.
Out singer Ricky Martin met with Uruguay's president Jose Mujica to discuss the singer's campaign against child slavery and the youth sex trade. Puerto Rico, Martin's birthplace, will soon open a center for young victims of exploitation.
KY is reaching out to the lesbian demographic with its first female same-sex advertisement. The ad touts KY Intense, an arousal gel specifically for women. The commercial started airing September 5th.
And John Lithgow, Matt Bomer of TV's White Collar, and Bradley Whitford have joined the roster of the one-night-only reading of Dustin Lance Black's Prop 8 themed play, 8. Whitford will play defense lawyer Charles Cooper, while Bomer will portray Jeff Cirillo, the real-life husband of fellow Prop 8 litigant Paul Fatami, played by Cheyenne Jackson. The reading also includes Marissa Tomei, Morgan Freeman, Christine Lottie, Rob Reiner, and will take place September 19th at the Eugene O'Neill Theater. And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Cindy Lauper. Big shout out to Windy City Clearcast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of September 5th, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Babes with Blades Theater Company presents The Double, the 1940 screwball comedy meets swashbuckler in his world premiere tribute to Cyrano de Bergerac. The play centers on Minnie, an actress and stage combatant reunited with her childhood crush, the B-movie starlet Olivia Wood. Performances Thursday through Saturday through September 24th at the Lincoln Square Theater, 4754 North Levitt. Check out BathesWithBlades.org for tickets and more.
Pride Films and Plays presents Women's Work Weekend, featuring staged readings of four new lesbian plays and four new lesbian screenplays. Over 5 days, see the next wave of lesbian comedy and drama for the stage and film during the Women's Work Weekend at Center on Halsted, September 7th to 11th. For more, visit PrideFilmsAndPlays.com.
Victory Gardens presents In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play. Sarah Rule's Tony-nominated comedy about female sexuality, intimacy, and marriage in the twilight of the Victorian age. For tickets and information, visit victorygardens.org. In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, is playing now. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com. Everybody, full disclosure, Sarah Gubbins is a friend of mine, and so I know her pretty well, but it's very rare that I get to sit down with her on my couch to share her with all of you, and I'm really enthusiastic about doing that. For those of you who don't know, Sarah Gubbins is an openly lesbian playwright here in Chicago. Her play, Fair Use, was seen at Steppenwolf's First Look Festival a couple of years ago, and it told the story of a gay woman's conflicted attraction to a straight coworker. And now, her new play, The Kid Thing, is exploring the conflict, pain, and humor of lesbians choosing or not choosing to have kids. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Amy, what's up?
I don't know if you've ever been on the podcast, have you?
I've never been on that. No, I'm a podcast virgin, I
You are. Yeah. You are a podcast virgin. Yeah. So talk to me about, you had a big life in the theater, working around theater, but being a writer is, you're kind of on the advent of a whole new adventure of being a playwright. What was your beginnings in theater, and then how did it evolve into you becoming a writer?
I started out as an actor. I went to acting school, and I was just terrible. I was so bad. You know, I went right through. I got the degree and everything, but then I went on, like, two auditions, and I was like, are you serious? Not only am I horrid, but this is no. So, but I like theater so much, mm-hmm. So I stayed in it, and I started a theater company and did the Chicago Start a Theater Company thing, mm-hmm. And then worked developing new plays, primarily as a dramaturg. Mm-hmm. And I did that, you know, like for almost, I don't know, 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. And then...
That's how we met, doing Whitman at About Face Theater, for any of you listening who saw that many moons ago at the Jane Addams Hull House.
Yeah, that was like one of my first shows.
Yeah.
And in the last decade.
Yeah.
Like a decade
don't
ago.
Don't give our year away. I mean, people think it just happened like 5 years ago.
It was yesterday.
It was in a different decade, so that already gives you a clue.
And then I'd always like wanted to, you know, write, but was very intimidated by things. And then I just started in earnest. I think, you know, Fair Use is really, I think, my first big play that, mm-hmm. that I reworked a number of times for a number of years, and then kind of went back to grad school and started doing a lot more writing.
Now, obviously, it's huge when you say that it was like really your first play, and then it gets put in the First Look Festival at Steppenwolf, because that's a huge festival where writers who have written lots of plays maybe give a first look at a new play they're writing. And here it was, not only you're giving a first look, but it's also your first play. What was kind of the spark for that play? I know it takes place in a law firm, which is something kind of you had some experience around.
Yes. And I'm gay, and there was a lesbian in it. No, I actually, a couple years previous, I had been working on a Cyrano refiguring, like the Cyrano play that was done at the MCA. Do you remember that Red Moon did? And
Cyrano de Bergerac,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. And so I remember working on that thinking, you know, this Roxanne character is just she gets the short end of the stick. Mm. And I had thought to, like, I want to like revenge that, you know? And I thought, well, what if, you know, instead of Cyrano having a big nose and the kind of the impossibility of beauty and all this stuff, it, like, what if there was, like, she's a lesbian, and what if, you know, and so kind of spiraled from there. So it was, but the whole play is, like, about intellectual property, and so I was reappropriating the story of Cyrano de Bergerac into this play,
right,
as its own kind of argument. And it was a ton of fun.
How was the experience at Steppenwolf? I mean, I think for those of us in Chicago, we think of Steppenwolf as kind of still, I would say, you know, the earliest thoughts of Steppenwolf was like this white male, straight, blue collar, visceral, gritty theater. And here you come in with, it's in a law firm and it's lesbian and there's a couple of guys, but yeah, you know, one's a metrosexual essentially, and like Sarah McLachlan or something. I don't know. But I mean, how was the fusion of that once you got that amazing opportunity?
You know, I remember when I got the call, because Ed Sobel was there. He was the director of new play development, and I had known him for a couple of years. And I remember I hung up the phone after they said, we'd really like to do your play in the first look. And I broke out in hives. And I had hives for like 3 months. So I just had this psychosomatic response. And you know, they're really good about new work and are very rigorous. And they just were like, they gave me 4 weeks, which is a ton of time.
Right.
And I made major changes to the play. So in their kind of like Steppenwolf aesthetic didn't impose on what this play was going to be. And they really, and then they just packed the audiences, which was so amazing, because you could really hear what an audience thought of your play, which was so helpful.
And it was a very funny play. I mean, it had moments of even screwball comedy in the midst of, you know, office antics. And you have to with something that's obviously tipping its hat to Cyrano.
Yeah.
The audience knows more than than the characters know, and that's fun and funny. Obviously, it was a marriage that worked, you and Steppenwolf, because now they have commissioned you to do a play this season. Talk about that, and what is that play for, and what is the play about?
The play is called FML,
which means. You can say it.
I can say it. Oh, yeah. Yay. In the text vernacular, that means fuck my life.
Fuck my life. Okay. FML.
FML colon how Carson McCullers saved my life. And the play is basically for their Steppenwolf Young Audience program series. Mm-hmm.
Which is super, super. You would think like, oh, it's their kids series. And it's like really not, because they did Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. Last year, The To Kill a Mockingbird that they did was like the hardest ticket in town to get, because they mostly had those seats for high school and college kids.
Yeah.
And so people who wanted to see it who were not couldn't get in. So it's a really renowned and becoming even a hot ticket in Chicago
it's really exceptional. And Steppenwolf Teen Council is a bunch of students that from all over the Chicagoland area that meet at Steppenwolf, I think almost weekly.
Mm-hmm.
They go and they see shows together. Mm-hmm. And really are, you know, have access to working artists and theater makers.
And most of these, though, are adaptations of literature, right? So are you getting to write an original script?
Last year, they did an original script, and that was the first year they had done a new play, which was Matt Smart's Samuel J. and K. It was basketball. It was phenomenal. And so what they asked me to do, they've often commissioned people to write adaptations of novels or novellas or whatnot. And so this year, I had talked to them about wanting to do something for this programming, and they approached me with the source material, which is Carson McCullers' novel, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. And but said, really, what we would like you to do is just be influenced by this book. Mm-hmm. And in their fall, in the fall slot, they're going to do a production of a straight adaptation of Heart is a Lonely Hunter.
And what is the story of that, just briefly, if people don't know?
Well,
that
it's
novel.
You know, it's a book that's like takes place in the South in the 30s, and it's the story of a deaf man who lives in this small town with his companion, and I'm using these words, you know, because nothing is overtly spoken, his companion. And once his companion is institutionalized, he goes and lives at a boarding house. And he has, the central figure's name is John Singer, and he has a real profound effect on a cast of disparate characters.
Okay.
And one of them being this young girl named Mick Kelly, who has a just love of music. And she's really, you know, from a very, very poor family. But she adores music, and you know, in through her relationship with John Singer, he buys a radio, and she listens to, you know, there's ways in which all of these very, very lonely souls mm-hmm. kind of congregate around this deaf man, who comes to a tragic ending.
Okay,
yeah.
So you read that, were inspired, and came up with "Fuck My Life."
I mean, it's obvious, right?
It's obvious. Totally obvious. So can you give me just, don't tell us the whole thing. So
no,
hopefully we can try to get tickets, but when that comes out in the winter. But what has kind of been your spin on it, and what did you launch out on with your story?
Well, I was very attracted to this notion of loneliness and kind of isolation and the ways in which that is exceedingly expressed in high school. And so it's the story of a out gay teen, girl Joe, and she encounters the book in her high school curriculum, but specifically through a very special high school teacher. And it's the play kind of is a not only a coming of age, but coming into one's artistic voice. She's a graphic novelist,
cool.
And so she her imagination kind of starts getting some traction as the play wears on, and as the characters and the kind of experience of this sort of literature kind of awaking this dormant soul. And of course there's ways in which things that happen in the novel start to mirror, you know, shadow mirror kind mm-hmm. of what happens in the high school.
And when will that be at Steppenwolf? I mean, you're obviously working on it and have had some workshops.
Yeah,
and,
we have. Well,
it's going to be in the winter, right?
Yeah, it's going to be February.
February.
Late February, March.
And we will look for it. We will look for FML.
FML.
So everybody doesn't have a podcast and can say, fuck my life.
It's true.
But that sounds very Steppenwolf, so I'm sure that was kind of the fusion that
yeah,
it's got a little bit of Steppenwolf edge to it. So the kid thing, which is the reason that we're at least talking today, because your play is currently running at Chicago Dramatists. This is a co-production with About Face Theater and Chicago Dramatists, both companies in which you are an artistic member of both. So that's super cool that you can bring both your homes together. What is the story of the kid thing?
You know what? It's about two lesbian couples, and one of them delivers the news that they're pregnant, and pretty much all hell breaks loose.
And all hell. Now, how much of your work? I mean, obviously, the three plays that we've discussed here, and these are not the only plays that you've written, all have gay characters. I mean, all of these plays have lesbian characters.
Yeah.
Do you feel a strong responsibility to write lesbian characters into the world of theater? I mean, we had like the Children's Hour, yeah. And then like a, you know, like the barren desert of lesbian characters. Like Craig Lucas gave us a pair, like in Blue Window, and then you know, I mean,
and then thank God for Paula Vogel and Claire
Chaffee. Yeah, Paula Vogel.
And
I mean,
Lisa Crone.
Yeah. I mean, they're starting to happen, but do you feel a responsibility to put these characters and your own?
Perspective
into
the world.
I mean, I do.
I don't know. It's not like a burden, you know. It's not like having to
take my mom's. No, but a responsibility. I don't feel is a burden. I mean,
I think most what draws me to write is just like shit that I can't figure out, you know. So you really put some, it's helpful to have a character or a class of characters, you know, a community on stage that is dealing with things in a specific way that is familiar to me. And but yeah, I think there's a dearth of lesbian voices.
Yeah.
And yet I think, you know, so often actors want to play that. They want to get inside that experience.
Yeah.
Playing gays. The gays, they're fun to play.
The gays are fun to play. So how, I mean, this is probably the question you'll get asked the most, but I think most writers do, but how much of yourself, how much of, you know, how much of the kid thing is autobiographical to Sarah Gubbins?
Yeah. I mean, it's, the thing is, and I don't mean to be glib, but like, it's all me and it's none, and none of it is, you know? And I think sometimes I show up in the most peculiar characters, you know. I show up more distinctly in the most peculiar characters. I think the thing that's very much me in this play is the fact that I tend to really like to turn things over, and I enjoy a good argument. So there's a lot of it's not a simple question whether or not to have a kid,
right?
And they really turn it over. So that's something that is. You know, that really lines up to who I am.
Now, is this a comedy? Is this a drama? Is what would you categorize your play as?
I would say that, you know, I was thinking, we're talking, it's like, dramedy sounds a little cheesy. Not cheesy.
Sounds like the Desperate Housewives.
It's not that. You know, it's a play that's kind of horrific and hilarious. I mean, people have called it witty. That's really nice of them.
Yes.
I also like
Little Coward was called witty.
You know, that's not bad.
Oscar Wilde was called witty. Other great gay playwrights.
Yeah, I mean, it's not The Hangover, you know, it's not a broad comedy, but that pain and discomfort
can be funny if other people are going through it.
Yeah. Those kind of, like, you know, the human condition is hilarious. And so I don't step away from, like, taking some pot shots at that.
Who are our characters? This is set in a current day.
It's set
in Chicago.
It's set in 2009, right after Michael Jackson died.
Okay,
and
that's already funny, or at least it might allow for some humor and some sadness, perhaps.
Yes,
I don't know.
Yes. And it's set in Chicago on the North Side, and there are two. There's the Nate and Margot are a couple, and Lee and Darcy are a couple.
And Nate and Lee are both women.
Yes.
Are we dealing with traditional butch femme characters, or are we dealing with...
There's more butch femme than makes some of the characters comfortable with during the... But yes, there's definitely some masculine-presenting lesbians, two of them, in fact.
Did
I tell you why I wrote the play?
No.
Oh, well, after fair use.
Yes. After fair use?
Yeah.
Okay. Which was the play about the attorney who is in love with one of her coworkers, who's straight.
Well, so that play had actually three lesbians on stage. Well, two lesbians and a bi girl, but, you know, two and a half? I don't know. So...
The bis want to be their own category, I think.
Okay.
The two bis lesbians. Two lesbians and a bisexual come into a bar.
Where's the daiquiri? No. Some folks saw it, a lot of folks saw it, and theater folks, and they were like, oh, we love the play, but... There's no way we can, produce a play with two lesbians in it. Like, come on. Like, that's a lot of lesbians, apparently.
So you doubled it.
So I doubled my money.
You doubled down and pushed it all in the center of the table, Sarah Gubbins.
I was like, okay, no one's going to produce this play? Dude, you know, I challenge you. So yes, so not only are there four lesbians in the play.
It took two companies to produce it, though, which is two lesbians per company, I think is good.
It's the probably lesbian quota.
Sarah Gubbins doubled down and got the kid thing. No, but so you had people say that you couldn't write a play with two lesbians. So seriously, that's why you wrote this play?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they said, I just really love the play. It's just, I mean, you know, and then you always hear that little, the shuffle back of like, I love the play and I would love to go see it at my theater, but my subscribers are just not going to be interested in a play that has two lesbians.
Which is so crazy. It's like saying, my company would love Raisin in the Sun, but they're all white, so they're not going to see a play about a family of African-American people.
It was the craziest thing.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, but getting pissed off really helped. So I said, well, I'm just gonna write this play for myself.
Is it all women?
No.
No.
There's a dude that shows up.
So, but I would imagine that from the time that you started writing this, which I guess was around when Michael Jackson died.
Yeah. Late 2009.
Really good that I could do that. That was just something that I inferred.
That's amazing.
But
you're a professional.
I'm really intuitive. But that from that time period, we have this huge success of Lisa Chulidenko's film. The Kids Are All Right.
Yeah.
Where we have two Oscar-winning nominated actresses with another hot. Male actor, you know, who also explore not the beginnings of having children, but like having adult children going off to college, and it becomes this huge Oscar. So nominated hit. Do you think that that's my little dog sneezing. Do you think that impacts this moment for this play and the life of this play for you?
I mean, I think it does in terms of one of the things that, you know, I think the outcome of the success of The Kids Are All Right made the kind of lesbian child rearing more universal. So the heteros could go to the cinema and go, we have those problems. Problems of infidelity, we have the problems of like
keeping
you know
sex alive and what are you decisions around make you know with your kids and
how honest are you and you know the just the kind of the alliance of parenthood and what it you know so I think that's really helpful because the thing that Chicago dramatist Annabelle Faithful said is like it's about lesbians but there are things that are so universal in this question and the thing that I always say too is it's not just the coupling but it's about the individual making a huge life choice within a couple that the play is taking a look at. So I think that's what Kids Are All Right really helps in terms of getting people excited about seeing the kid thing. It's, you know, it says like, oh, we love the kid, you know, we love that movie and it's about us, even if it's about lesbians. Right. I think the logic of that sentence is that lesbians are us. And who doesn't want lesbians to be ours?
It's really... Do you want me to answer that? That's just so easy. Just let it go right on by. Well, it's very exciting. And I do think it's, you know, your writing is very universal. And as people saw in Fair Use, I mean, the audiences, the couple of times that I saw it, you know, were just laughing and moved and really in it. And I expect the same thing from the kid thing. Sarah Gevins has a very unique voice. And even if she wasn't my good friend, I would say that, you know, her plays are funny and universal and really accessible. And I think that this is a play for gay men to go and see because gay men are also making these decisions. And
absolutely.
And we do have there is a unique, it's not going to, I used to tell my dad one time after I came out and we were talking and I don't know, somebody mentioned something about kids. And I said, well, Dad, you know, it'll never be an accident. Will be a very planned thing. And I think it is the one thing that, straight couples can also, you know, go off the pill and or maybe struggle and then have to go through means that, you know, gay and lesbian couples have to go through because they want to have a child. They want to build a family. That's something essential to who they are and what they want. And so that's universal. Like there are going to be straight couples who understand that, but it is a thoughtful process for two gay men or two gay women to have a family.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't something that's just like, oh, we had a great weekend in Vegas and now 9 months later, this thing is going to happen, you know? And I think that is a universal collective pause that everybody could kind of get inside of if they had that opportunity in their life to get into. So what's next for you? I know you're going to be traveling to and from Chicago.
I'm off to St. Paul, Minneapolis. I'm up at the Playwright Center up there. I'm going to spend a year as a Jerome Fellow writing away with
So they pay you to write for a year.
They pay me to write, and that's good because I'm going to need to buy a lot of long underwear.
Yeah. Well, write some good plays and bring them back to Chicago.
Okay.
And make sure there's some lesbians in them.
Oh.
Because otherwise we wouldn't know what to do.
Exactly.
I mean, next one we'll have eight, I guess.
Yes,
it'll be like eight lesbian women.
Totally.
That would be great.
Eight lesbian women.
That's the next play.
Five years, man. When we hit 16, it's going to be a bitch.
It's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy exponentially. They're just going to be lesbians. It's going to be a clown car of lesbians. It's going to be great. Well, for right now, The Kid Thing is running at Chicago Dramatists, which is 1105 West Chicago Avenue. 1105 West Chicago Avenue. It's playing now through October 16th. Get your tickets now. It is a co-production with About Face Theater, which is fresh off its heels of the hit The Homosexuals. So this is much in the same vein, but of a different gender, kind of. It's kind of our inverse, the yin-yang play to The Homosexuals. And if you'd like tickets and information, you can go to aboutfacetheater.com. That's really easy. We'll have their website linked on our show notes, so you can just click right through our website and get right to the information on tickets and about the show and everything. So do not miss it, because October 16th will be here before you know it. So make your plans now and grab some friends or have a good date night and go see The Kid Thing. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY.
So, Mitchell, let's go see The Kid Thing.
Oh, let's go see it together.
I really want to go see it.
Yeah,
so
you know, I'm
we'll
doing an East Coast sojourn.
Yes.
And then when I get back, we'll go see The Kid
let's
Thing.
Let's go see The Kid Thing when I'm you get gonna... back. I hope all of you go and see it. Support queer theater in Chicago.
Yeah, because after all of our discussion, too, it's also very funny.
It's very funny. Yeah. And it's a great play. We've both, I've read the play. I've never seen the play, of course, because it's a world premiere. So I'm very excited about seeing it. And About Face is right off the heels of the hit Homosexuals. So
plays that were world premieres for About Face both did very well for both of our playwrights.
Yes.
You know, so Sarah, Pat Kane,
Philip Dawkins.
I mean, we have some extraordinary playwrights.
Yeah, some extraordinary queer playwrights. So go support them and go out and see The Kid Thing. Have a great week, everyone.
Bye-bye.
And can you feel the vibe? Does it move?
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now. That's how I found my way to God. Oh, that's how